Ray is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking.
It's the Michael K. Show.
Michael K. is on the radio today. So turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is John Franco, and you're listening to The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN New York. Let's go Mets.
Thank you, Johnny, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed The Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday. Oh, no. I hear a lot of crackling.
Is everybody all right?
Yeah, September 15th, 2021. That was not a good way to start the show at all, but... it's going to be a great show. We talked about it. We planned it. Every single second is planned. That's how in-depth it's become. Kay, LeGreco, Rosenberg, we're apart. We're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that is certainly your responsibility. How's everybody doing?
Fantastic.
Really?
Yeah.
Super. Super.
I guess Peter's got no opinion on the subject.
No, he doesn't know how he's doing. Sad. How about Peter? I wanted to punch Peter in the face today. I don't know if you realize it.
Oh, really? Tell me.
Excuse me?
He's planning a 1:30 pre-tape. Oh, yeah, I'm going to come to the stadium an hour and a half before I have to for your pre-tape on Friday. No, it's not happening. The nerve of this guy.
I forgot the show starts at 3.
I knew it.
Really?
I said to myself, this lunatic has forgotten that we start at 3. I'm going to bet my life on it.
So then why didn't you just ask that instead of deciding to hate my guts? Why didn't you say, hey, do you forget the show starts at 3?
Even if you forgot, I would hate your guts. And if you planned a 1:30 pre-tape for a 3 o'clock show, I hated your guts still. Well, so there's no way that I wouldn't have hate your guts.
Well, thank you. You're just a great guy.
A great guy.
All around. You're a great guy.
How could you forget the show starts at 3? Don, all we do is promote the fact the show starts at 3.
And if you're gonna, and listen, if Peter is going to forget what time it is, Michael, it's going to be later, not earlier.
True. By the way,
you would agree I can be forgiven for, at this point in our time, not remembering when our show starts.
I understand. I was having some fun with you. But I think –
because you're a good guy.
But I think you are aggressively trying to better the show.
Thank you.
And we'll work it out. We'll make it happen.
Yeah.
Maybe with or without you, Michael. Thank How about you. That?
That's fine with me.
See?
I just want I want you guys to know I'm going to make it 2 for 2 for Thursday night picks tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm locked in, done the homework.
What's
done
the line?
A lot of reading, and 2 for 2 because I got last Thursday. I might even make this a 3-pointer.
What's the line?
It's 3. Washington by 3. You guys don't have to do it.
What do you think he's thinking there?
Peter has a bad connection wherever he is.
There's a lot going on there.
You could see from his background, he's not even in his house right now. So he's decided to use some Fugazi internet connection, and it's not working.
It's not working. So we can straighten that out off the air.
Yeah, and why don't we just do the show without him?
Well, no, why'd he got to jump to that conclusion?
What other conclusion? You want him to bring the show down with a bad connection?
No,
one thing. One of the hosts, I'm sorry, you have to have a better connection.
I think we have to effort to try to correct the situation, not just abort and then not revisit it.
Abort. I think you have to abort right here. That's all there is to it.
Hey, listen, you're the boss. If that's
I'm not the boss. Don't you give me I'm the boss. I have no power whatsoever.
Well,
but I will tell you.
Power, what power do I have?
You have none either.
But in this particular situation,
I have no power.
Well,
it's some pinhead suit that's going to pull the plug.
And they won't, so you might as well just try to get it corrected.
The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save, Don.
No.
It's the kind of service you get.
Oh, yeah.
Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Well, it was all set up, Don. It was all set up to blow right up in your face. Like a rigged pie. You know, you're leaning over the pie, sniffing it, and it just blows up right in your face.
That's a thing?
Oh, yeah.
A rigged pie?
A rigged pie. There's a rigged pie store on Lexington Avenue. I don't know if you've ever been there. You go in, like a rigged pie, and then they give you a little remote control, so if somebody leans over to smell it, pfft,
I've heard of the baby powder in the blow dryer.
This is Rick Pye.
I've heard of, like, you know, cutting up the suits and all that hung up. But the rigged pie, that escaped me. I never noticed that.
Next time we're in the studio, I'll get you one. Anyway, okay. It was all set for you to enjoy the pie. It was all set for you to say, you know, I was wrong yesterday. It was all set. All the Mets had to do. There was a runner at third base with one out in the 10th inning. Just score the run. Just score it. So first and third, one man out. What does Lindor do? He rolls over on a changeup. That's bad hitting. And Goldschmidt turns it into a 3-2-5 double play. Oh. And then Rojas makes a questionable decision, bringing in a rookie in his 10th game of his life. And the Mets lose a game that, done. Everybody in front of them lost. And if they had beaten the Cardinals, then the Cardinals would have lost. They would have gained on everybody.
It would have been very difficult. And I'm thinking about this as the four-hour-plus game continued to unfold in front of me.
You know, it was a long game. I was home already after the Yankee game.
And you don't say, well, it went 11 innings, Don. It was a long – but listen, there's a lot going on, excitement. You know, the Mets jump out to a 2-0 lead, blow it right away. You know, but they seem like that even I, who is a naysayer, would have a difficult time saying that they weren't alive if they could have won that game last night. Everybody lost. Padres lost. Reds lost. If the Mets had beaten the Cardinals, they would have lost. Braves lost. Phillies lost. And when something like that breaks your way, you take advantage of it, well, then who knows what could happen here. But, of course, they don't. And why? The ringing theme that I've had for the last month is they're just not good enough to. And now they've dropped a couple of games to the Cardinals, and the Cardinals were begging to get beat last night. Begging to get beat. Even when they took the 7-4 lead in the 11th, Michael.
Oh, yeah, they tried to give it back. Tried to give it back.
Tried to give it back.
And they send up Almora as a pinch hitter. Come on.
So it looks like it's just going to be one of those, like the Mets refuse to lose type games, what makes you think, all right, even though they're still a game under 500 had they won yesterday, again, the math is just right in your face. These teams are just letting the Mets back into it. But again, they're just not good enough to take advantage of this. And they're starting to really, I mean, running out of road here. There's only 16 games left.
Here's what I want to know, though.
Yeah.
You bring in Reed, right? I mean, I don't believe, you know, you've been with me a long time. I don't believe in must wins unless it's mathematically must. But that was close to a must win.
Sure.
Without being mathematically must. You bring in Reed and you don't bring in Trevor Williams, who was a veteran? I mean, then you brought him in after Reed. After Reed had given up three hits and three runs, what are you doing? And then, I mean, Lugo needed a day. These games are all hands on deck.
No, there's no needing days now. I mean, I know you're not – I love the cliche, you don't scoreboard watch. No, that's all you do this time of year in September is you scoreboard watch.
That's one thing Aaron Boone's always honest about. He goes, I'm always looking at the scoreboard.
Now, the only game that was in progress at that point was Giants-Padres, and Padres are one of the teams they're chasing after. Not the team, but one of the teams. Mm-hmm. And that game was, I think, 1-1 at the time. So, obviously, the Padres could lose, and they did, to the red-hot Giants. And so that all of a sudden morphs into a must-win. So there is no giving them a day because there's no days left. Now you're down to 16 games, Michael, just 16. And the schedule doesn't get any easier.
Mm-mm-mm. Oh, did you solve your problem there?
Solved it. How we'll do see. I sound now? How are we doing?
Oh, you sound crystal clear.
Crystal clear. I got the cameras working. We're all good. Happy Yom Kippur, everyone. We're all set from Maryland, rearing to go.
Oh, I didn't know you were in Maryland.
I'm in Maryland, buddy.
Oh, I thought you were at Miss Hatton's place.
No, I'm not at Miss Hatton's place. I'm at my brother's place.
Nick.
That's right. I'm at Nick and Jenny's house.
You got the twins there.
That's right. That's right.
I'm so in tune with your family.
You really are. You really are tremendous. You're a bad guy.
13-year-old twins.
They're 13-year-old twins, Alex and Jessa. Good job.
Thank you.
So really good stuff.
Gorgeous. Let's see, he knows. The information is king on this show.
Absolutely.
And in Michael's life. So, but getting back to the point, Michael, is that you're running out of road here. Because you could talk about, oh, you're 5.5. No, the loss column is what's important. You're 7 back of the loss column of the Braves.
Yeah, that's over.
7 with 16 to play. So it's 7.
Only the Mets could blow that.
Right. But it's six with 17 left to play last night. So, you know, you still want to try to see if you can get the division. But, all right, let's play the wild card game. So you're taking on the team that has the last wild card spot, or at least tied for it at that particular moment before the game is over. But you're still four back in the loss column of them. Like, so you can't play. There's no resting. You got to use whatever. That particular game with everybody losing is a must-have game. You're not going to be able to win all the games left on your schedule, right? They're not going to go on a 17-game winning streak counting last night to close out the season. So you know you're going to lose your games. But at that particular moment, throw the book out, throw the analytics out, I need a day. At that particular moment, maybe it didn't start out that way when the game started. But at that particular moment, it becomes a must win. It becomes all hands on deck. The second Baez hit that home run to tie the game. And by the way, could somebody tell Baez don't celebrate until the damn ball's over the line? If that had hit just a foot below the line, he gets thrown out at second. But whatever. Then once he hits the home run to tie the game, it becomes a must win. And that's what a manager that's worth anything realizes. During batting practice, it's one thing. But then sometimes games that you could let get away all of a sudden become games you cannot let get away. All hands are on deck. The second Baez hits the home run, you've got to do everything in your power to win that game.
I mean, if you think about it, even before that, Don, you had a lead, all right? So it was kind of sketchy. Stroman pitches another outstanding game. Six innings, 89 pitches. All of a sudden, he's out. And if you listen to Rojas yesterday, it seems like Stroman said he couldn't go anymore. I mean, if the guy can't go anymore, he can't go anymore. Then the first pitcher out of the pen threw seven pitches, got a one, I forget who it was, 1-2-3 inning. And he doesn't let him pitch the second inning. He brings in Familia.
Loop threw seven pitches, Michael.
Yeah. Loop. And they took him out after seven pitches. So then they bring in Familia. He gives up the home run. So all of a sudden they're losing. Baez then hits the home run. But I got to tell you, everything I've ever heard about resting players, I've always heard we rest players in April, May, and June so that they're ready for the stretch run, that we don't have to rest them then. That's why I was shocked last Friday when Stanton wasn't in the lineup, and they lost the game. He needs a day. I'm not going to play him 3 days. Well, why? And then yesterday, Luis Rojas, to me, seems like a heck of a guy, or as Pete would say,
a great guy.
Yeah, seems like that. But he said, you know, I can't push these guys. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to their career. Whoa, okay. But is it fair to your organization where you have an outside chance to catch lightning in a bottle? And you bring in a guy who's a rookie, and you can't bring in Lugo there? I mean, the whole thing is so weird. You rest people early so you don't have to rest them now. They should all be playing every inning of every game the rest of the way. There's no need to rest people. And I understand sports science. I get it. But if you can't play down the stretch and must win games, then what good are you? What good are you? If anybody in this day and age, like the Yankees have 17 games remaining now, if somebody walks into Aaron Boone's office and says, I need a day, you make a mental note and say, I get rid of this guy at the end of the year. You need a day with 17 games remaining, with 20 games remaining, with 25 games remaining? You need a day today? And if any Met goes into Rojas's office, go, I can't pitch tonight. I need a day. No, 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 no. This is when you evaluate for 2022. You can't have that. You have to see what's in a player's soul. How important is winning? And I'm not saying go out and hurt yourself, but I need a day doesn't play. I'm sorry. I can't accept I need a day.
But also, why does he need a day? Unless Lugo's hurt. Like, he needs a day because something's ailing him. But if it's just rest, Michael, he pitched an inning on the 8th, off the 9th and 10th. He pitched back-to-back days on the 11th and 12th. So he had Monday off. So he pitched two innings in the Yankee series on back-to-back days, and then he was off on Monday, and he pitched a – so why couldn't he pitch on Tuesday? He had a day off. He needed – now he had to have 2 days?
I know just in – dealing with the Yankees, they don't like to pitch anybody 3 days in a row or 4 out of 5. Again, it's all sports science, but stick to sports science where the sun doesn't shine.
Jam it up!
You've got 16 games remaining to make up ground, and that was a must win.
Again, stop it. I'm sorry. Not every – see, this is where you get into trouble, where every game's the same. It's not the same, all right? If it's June, July, all right, I get it. But you're in September. You're down to the last, counting last night, 17 games left. You need a miracle. But you got a game. You got a game that you have to have. Lugo didn't pitch the day before. All right, he pitched 2 days in a row, but it was only one inning. And didn't pitch the 2 days prior to that. He's pitched 3 innings since the 8th of September. Last night was the 14th. I'm sorry. All right, you don't like pitching guys 3 times in 4 days? I don't like to do it. Analytics tell you not to do it. But when you get to the middle of September and you need every single game, then I think you throw the book out the window. You set fire to it.
I am shocked the longer I'm in this game and how it's changed so much. And I don't want to sound like some of our callers. You know, I remember when Mickey Mantle would wrap it. You know, I get it. But the amount of big-name players around baseball that I know for a fact have walked into managers, and I need a day. This is within the last month. I need a day.
Wow.
I mean, there's a different mindset. And you know what? I don't even blame the players, because that's how they're being raised now in organizations. They're being babied. If you can't play down the stretch, really, what good are you?
And this might sound ridiculous, but I there's a mental game in play here, right? If Lugo comes to the ballpark, Michael, being told that he's not available, that they're not going to pitch him, he probably mentally shuts himself down, right? So why would you do that? Just, hey, be ready. I know we told you you're going to be up, but be ready. And you know what the joke about it is, Michael, were they going to pitch a position player before bringing him in if that game went any longer?
I thought about it. They might have. They very well might have pitched a position player in a must-win game.
See, so that's – you really – it's a tough enough sport as it is. It's 162 games. It's tough. It's even with the guys getting rests, Michael, it's a grind. But you work your tail off, whether you deserve it or not. Whether you're the Mets and you deserve it or not, you're still in this thing technically. By the grace of God, because of the Braves and the Phillies and the Padres who can't all of a sudden win, and the Reds that are losing to everybody, they're handing you an opportunity. So all that grind, all that work, you're gifted a chance in the middle of September to be playing a meaningful game. Don't you deserve to honor the sport and the athlete and do everything you can to try to win? Nobody's asking you to go out there and sacrifice your career. Nobody's asking a starting pitcher to go out and throw 150 pitches. Nobody's asking you to run through a wall or a ball of fire. We're just saying, and I'm sure these players, Michael, deep down inside, they want to come in. But unlike a position player, what's he supposed to do? What's Lugo supposed to do? He can't bring himself into the game.
Well, that's an easy fix. If he's down for the day, you got to walk down to Hefner or Rojas and go, I'm good today if you need me. And I'm not saying he did or didn't do that, but it seemed like Rojas wants to protect these players from themselves, which is very altruistic, and I hope he really feels good about it when he's out of a job next year. They don't make the playoffs. He's not coming back.
But this is why you play. And I'm sure all of these players desperately want to show. I get it. It's about contracts, and it's about money, and it's about long-term health. But in that particular moment, is it really the end of the world, Michael, if he pitches a third time in 4 days? I mean, I could see if he had pitched 4 or 5 days in a row or something and his arms hanging. Well, that's a different story. Nobody's asking you to do that. But that's the idea. Well, we don't like to pitch somebody a third time in 4 days, so we're going to now put this game in peril. Well, I got news for you. There'll be plenty of rest coming up because pretty soon the math's not going to work for you.
You know what I've noticed, too? I believe that the Mets are more scripted than we even consider the Yankees to be. I think every string is pulled from upstairs for Rojas. He's a 38-year-old guy, never had a big league career, career minor leaguer. This is his shot. And I think he's following the script to the letter. They told him exactly that. I think they tell him exactly what to do and who to play. I think he's down with it. I really do. And the Mets analytic group is in its nascent stages. It's not like the Yankees have been doing this for 10 years. The Rays have been doing this for 10 years. The Mets just started. They don't have near the staff that the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Rays or the Red Sox have. And I believe that they are calling the shots for Rojas because he's 38 years old. Well, what's he going to say? No. But these guys that allow the front office to dictate everything they do, if and when they lose their job, they are going to be really, really regretting the fact that they rolled over and played dead, that they didn't give themselves a chance. They didn't let their baseball acumen take over. You can't tell me that Luis Rojas, with 10 years in the minor leagues, doesn't know baseball better than some pencil pusher. But again, these guys are down. I've got to worry about their career. I can't. It's not fair to do that to them. Well, is it fair to do it to the fans to take away a game that you had to win? Again, I'm not saying play somebody if they're hurt. That's not what I'm saying. But to push them a little, just to push them a little bit, push. Or as Don would say, push them a little.
You got to push them.
Don also said another word.
Oh, no.
In this first 20 minutes. That he does all the time, but I'm not even going to bring it up, so you'll have to listen and hear.
What did I do now?
No. You do it all the time. There's a word that you use, and
did I say went instead of gone?
No. You've corrected that beautifully. This is just a mispronunciation.
I'd like to be straightened out here. Go ahead. It's all on the table.
Yeah, come on.
You know, we're big boys.
No.
Sometimes I think you're garbage, Michael.
You won't say it.
You're not doing me any favors. Now you brought it up. You've gotten this far.
I got to be honest. I forgot. But when you said it, there's the word again. I mean, maybe during the break I'll listen to the whole segment again.
Andrew, I'm sure Andrew knows.
Andrew, do you know the word I'm talking about?
No, I don't. I actually have no idea.
Anthony?
Oh, I know what it is. B-E-G-G-I-N-G. Begging.
Begging.
He never says begging. He says bagging.
Begging?
Begging. It's like begging. It's like a bagging at a supermarket.
So he says he's bagging, like bagging.
Pretty
groceries.
Much. It's a morphing of bagging and begging.
Well,
it's like
begging.
Begging.
It's begging.
Begging.
Oh, begging. There it is. That's like a
but
Baltimore.
It should be begging.
The Jersey accent's like Baltimore Jace.
So that's an accent more than ignorance.
No, it's not. Oh. First of all, none of it's ignorance.
None of it's Don ignorance. Accent. He just has a Don accent.
Is there a Don accent? I didn't know that.
Apparently there is. Push.
Push.
I still don't even hear the push.
Now you've corrected.
That was better.
That was very good.
I do well.
Look at you.
We talk extemporaneously, right?
Sure. Right off the cuff.
No, I think, but that's the show. I'm not giving a speech here. We're just talking. We're throwing it around, as you would say.
Right.
Shooting the bull.
Yeah.
And sometimes when you do that, you say things out of order or incorrectly, but the message is heard.
Sure does.
I don't think anybody wants me to stand up here like George Plimpton and recite the Gettysburg Address. We're talking. We're extemporaneously speaking to each other. I don't give a speech, and then when I stop, Michael then gives a speech, and then Peter gives a speech.
Well, you're the closest.
You're the closest
to a speech giver. You give speeches.
Depends on the day.
Some call them rants, but they're
emotional,
long form. Yeah.
You don't think in some way, shape, or form.
They're certainly not an exchange of ideas.
Hey, I'll tell you this. I was thinking about this the other day. There are moments, Peter, where Michael goes off way longer than I do.
But
because it's the Michael Kay Show, nobody thinks or says anything.
Not true.
That's what he's supposed to do.
Right.
But there are times, don't you feel, Peter, especially you, where you feel like I'm laying out here, Michael's on a roll. Now, you do it with me, but tell me you don't do that with Michael.
And not only that, I feel like when I speak for like a minute straight on something I happen to be passionate about, obviously.
Don interrupts you.
Obviously, it's not this subject. No, it's whatever it may be. At the end, I feel like, oh, my God, I did something wrong. I'm not Michael. I should know my role and shut my mouth.
But
again, I do not go off on those toots out loud. The longest I ever speak is at the beginning if we're talking about the Yankees, because I figure, well, I kind of probably know the Yankees better than Don and Peter, although they both know it. So I go off a little bit. But the length of the show, it's all Don.
No, wait.
I mean, Don's number one.
Yeah,
but
a lot.
But I don't know if
there's anything wrong with that. Nothing.
But there is in the perception of why is the number two guy acting like he's number one. That's why when Michael, as the number one guy, goes on a toot, nobody bats an eye because he's supposed to. He's Michael Kay.
And with Peter,
it's even worse because why is Peter talking? He's the update guy.
Here's where you're wrong. It's not that why is Don talking? He's not Michael. Why is he talking? It's why is Don talking more than a third of the time when there's three of us? That's all it is. Has nothing to do with the name on the show.
But I don't.
We should have equal amounts of things to say.
I disagree.
All right. It's
Peter, do you think that
years.
This show, honestly, Peter, honestly,
go ahead.
Is this show designed for us all to get an equal share of the time?
By its nature, I can't speak for how it was created. I wasn't here. I can tell you that I do feel we all, at this point, have the absolute option to speak as much as we want.
Well, absolutely, we have the
option. But then, afterwards, I think the audience has a constant changing of feelings of what they want. And ultimately, when Don or I do too much, there's a get back in your place. What I love about me, though, is I get it on both ends. If I don't talk enough, I get tweets, "Why are you even there, you fat loser?" And then if I give too long an opinion, "Shut up, it's not your show." So we can't win, Don. But
Wait a second, Peter. I want you to be
honest.
Why
do you have
now.
This guy Rosenberg on the show?
I want you to be honest. I want you to look me right in the eyes.
Okay.
When you're going off on a toot and you're talking Washington football team or something like that, who's the guy interrupting you? Me or Don?
You mean that when I hear the little...
Who's that? Me or Don?
It's usually Don. If I'm being honest, it's usually Don.
All right, thank you. That's all I need to know.
I have a lot to say.
I have an opinion on everything. It's a curse. I'm telling you, it's a curse.
Those are facts. It's a curse.
I can't help myself.
Listen. No, but that's why people love you. Don't apologize.
And that curse
but just know that we see it and we understand what you're doing to us.
That curse is going to send your beautiful children to college, okay?
But why do I'm made to feel guilty about it?
I'm sorry that I'm passionate.
You know what? You're only feeling guilty because maybe you're guilty. We're not trying to make you feel guilty. I love what you do on the show.
Well, you do accuse him of speaking 80% of the time.
70. I've never said 80.
You accuse him of – no, it's like 80% of days that we do the show that you accuse him of speaking 70% of the time.
So 4 out of the 5 days each week I say it.
That's right. And 60% of the time, it works every time.
All right, so let's towel off, give Don a chance to reload, and we want to hear from you as well, 1-800-919-37. Rich Catino has chimed in and said he doesn't understand why they didn't use Brad Hand yesterday.
It's a good point. I mean, it would have been a better option.
Than a rookie.
Anyone ever seen Catino and Samini in the same place at the same time?
Yeah.
You sure?
Oh, they're best friends, the two of them.
Oh. Because I had a theory.
They go clubbing together.
That's not true.
I don't.
Yes.
Now you went one step too far.
Rich can party with the best of them.
Oh, we got Rich stories that you can't tell on the air.
I'm saying Rich Catino.
That's what I'm saying.
Samini, on the other hand, has a lot in common with somebody that we talk about off the air.
Oh, I know exactly who you're thinking, and that's just wrong. You're wrong about the guy we talk about off the air, and you're wrong about Samini. But Catino has a side life that you don't even can't even talk about.
Really? That's almost incriminating.
We have spied Catino in places that he'd be mortified that we knew he was there. Mortified.
Doesn't stop him from doing it, though.
No, does it constantly.
Well, that's Catino, not Samini.
No, that's Samini. No,
this is Catino. An animal. The guy's an animal. Comes across as a really nice guy, which he is. Animal behind the scenes.
I think there should be an ESPN Plus TV show about both.
And no, I think there should be a 30 for 30 on Catino.
That good?
Yeah.
Would you go as far as saying you think Samini is like the exact opposite of Catino?
Yes.
So this TV show idea could work.
Michael, the odd couple.
Michael, come up with a creative name involving the word rich for the title of the show. By the time we get back
to How about rich
break,
and poor?
No.
How about isn't that rich?
Richly deserving. Anyway, we'll come back. Got a lot of stuff to ponder, and we want to talk to you as well. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
I should know my role and shut my mouth.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN, brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We try to cover all news here. And the Minister of Health of Trinidad and Tobago,
I saw this.
Terence Dale Singh, responds to the swollen cube claim made by Nicki Minaj. She said that a friend of hers... of a cousin of hers took the COVID vaccine and his private area swelled up.
I like cubes.
And his fiance canceled their wedding. Well, Dr. Daya Sling says there is no such reported case in Trinidad and Tobago. So I don't know. Maybe the guy just didn't go to the hospital because he was embarrassed.
Or maybe the story's not true.
Yeah.
Well, Jimmy Kimmel said he'd like to get the guy on for an interview, and Nicki Minaj says, make me an offer. She said, I'm his agent.
Really?
Yep. He could be Cube guy.
That's true. Cube guy.
Yeah. I mean, you could really market yourself that way.
Because when did the news about Norm MacDonald come down? It was like before the show.
Right.
Right? So that was noon L.A. time. When does he tape? Because I thought Kimmel would have had a whole open about Norm MacDonald, and he didn't. So did they tape before he found out?
They could have yesterday. You never know what's going on in a given week. Sometimes they do the end of the week. They'll do a couple of shows in one day, in which case maybe they started early. Jewish holiday, who knows?
All right, now, Donald, I've got to be honest. You know I'm honest on the show all the time. I have not yet seen the Mets 30 for 30. You have a quick review for our Met fans.
Well, the first two aired last night, and it's terrific. And even if you're a Met fan that kind of knows the whole story, they've got so much more information. They talk to everybody. And they really do a great job, Michael, of intertwining not just what was happening with the Mets, but also what was happening in the city at the time. And it opens with just the whole vibe of the Mets, of them coming in, replacing the Dodgers and the Giants. They kind of give a brief history. But it also goes into the dark times for the Mets in the 70s and also the dark time for the city in the 70s. And so it really intertwines news, so it's very relatable, and some great footage and some great highlights, and they talk to everybody. You know, guys that you don't really get a chance to talk to anymore. You know, Roger McDowell and Davey Johnson was great, the widow of Gary Carter. The one feeling, and I don't want to give a lot away, but especially in the second episode, Gary was just not well-liked at all. I think they respected him, but Keith Hernandez outright makes fun of the guy.
Makes fun of him now?
Yeah. In a way, the way he acted and how he was such in love with the camera. Like, he just flat out said, there was one part where he talked about, like, Gary would go, and they would show, like, a moment like where Gary would go out and talk to the pitcher, and it would be Sid Fernandez. And then Gary would go back, and Keith would then say something to Sid. And Keith would say, don't listen to what Gary said. Just throw a fastball. And then they would break to Sid, who would say, listen, I love Gary, but Keith was the leader of the team. And the theme was Gary thought he was the leader, but he wasn't. And they're not talking ill of him, Peter. It's just, I was really just shocked how open they were about how they respected him, but they really didn't like him.
I think in retrospect, they think more of him than they did then. I mean, even Daryl has told me personally, he said, I wish I had listened to the stuff that Gary was telling me then. He said, I'd be a better person, and I wouldn't have gotten into the trouble I did.
Yeah, because that was the thing. They were a bunch of bad boys.
And he wasn't.
And he was
kind of like an angel, right.
And even they had that footage. It's kind of rare. I've seen it before. In spring training, when Mookie gets hit in the face with the ball, and Mookie was out for the start of the season because of that, and Gary's over him, and they mic it, and he kept saying, oh, my gosh. Like, he wouldn't swear. It was always golly gee. Like, he was pretty genuine that way, but it didn't come across to them that way because they all swore and they all drank and they were having fun, and Gary was this angelic guy, and they just didn't want to be bothered with. And they also thought it was an act. But I'm surprised, even after death, that they were very open about how they thought, Keith comes out and says, listen, I respect him. He wanted to win, and he came to play, and he iced his knees an hour before the game and still ran on it off the field. But they just couldn't take his act.
And he probably couldn't take their act.
Yeah, because he was probably preachy, right?
Well, he was probably disgusted by the way they acted.
Yeah. And that was and they even get into the greenies, too. It's really good. It just brings back a lot of memories, but it's not a love story by any stretch. But Doc didn't look great, and he's kind of fluctuated with his weight, and he's last time we saw him, he was very skinny. Now he's kind of bigger.
Well, they had Doc on Sunday Night Baseball this week. Mm-hmm. He looked okay. They had him on a Zoom as part of the, you know, part of the broadcast.
And it got into Keith's relationship with his dad. So it's really good. There's two more parts tonight. They air back to back. Don't make the mistake I did and record the first one and not the second one. So I had to go back to the app and watch the second one this afternoon.
John, I've only watched the first one. Where are we when the second one ends?
Right now, we are the second one ends just as the regular season's concluding.
Okay.
So I'm assuming three is going to be a lot of the postseason, and then four is probably the aftermath.
All right, so let's talk about the story. I believe it first broke in Newsday. I want to give proper credit. Where they said that Sandy's definitely going to be back next year. And I think people are taking it the wrong way. If it's done correctly and the way they had planned it at the beginning, Sandy's really not going to have any say in the baseball ops. He's going to be the president of the team and more in line with the business operations. And then they're going to hire a guy, maybe a Theo Epstein, maybe a Billy Beane, that's going to be the president of baseball operations. And Sandy really will not be able to, you know, lord over that person. I guess the only person that that new hire has to answer to is Steve Cohen. So I don't think it's I think that there was an agreement with baseball. I'm going to keep Sandy around in order for you guys to approve me. But as long as Sandy being the head of operations or whatever doesn't discourage a guy like Beane or Epstein to take the job, then what's the big deal if he's in the front office handling business but not baseball?
I hear what you're saying, but is he that good of a businessman that he's got to hang around there? Like, I get that was probably a great way to get the Mets because Sandy was going to be his governor and make sure that he didn't go off the rails spending. But, all right, he's done that. He's gotten the team. He's been approved by it. Hasn't Sandy done enough where you could really legitimately fire him without anybody wondering what's going on?
He's made terrible hires.
Right. So, all right, so now you're going to say, well, he's just going to be on the business end. He's not going to be on the baseball end. But he's obviously going to be in the hiring of his replacement.
Yep. Well, you would hope that Cohen takes over that.
But if Cohen's going to take over that, then what's the infatuation with Sandy? I thought the whole reason you brought Sandy in was because he was kind of like, for people that don't know, and it's not at this level, but it's very similar to the Islanders, when Charles Wong bought the team, he wasn't a hockey guy, so he had Mike Milbury because Mike Milbury was his hockey guy. Like, and even though Steve Cohen was a fan, he's not a baseball savant, so is he holding on to Sandy as his baseball confidant, his guy that can whisper in his ear and give him advice? And if that's the case, then is that a good thing?
I think not. I think the thing is they need a new baseball guy.
But that's who will be. Sandy's not going to be involved in baseball, I don't think. And I hear what Don's saying. What's his business acumen? He's been in baseball. And also, if you ever wanted to, like, have Sandy step away, just say Mickey Callaway.
Yeah.
And then the two GMs.
Yeah.
I mean, the vetting process is not very good over in Queens.
No, and it would be actually a smart thing to do just from a perception standpoint. We're getting away from a lot of the old school stuff here, and we're going to think differently, and I'm going to bring in my own people. Sandy was here as a confidant early on to make the transition, and now we're ready to move on. Another analogy, Michael, that's kind of similar to is how, like, Isaiah Thomas was always in Jim Dolan's ear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so do I want – if Sandy's going to be there, tell me he's not going to be whispering into Steve's ear, hey, I don't know. You hired Theo or you hired this guy, but I wouldn't do it if I were you. You know, it's up to you, boss, but I'm only the business guy, but I've been in this game a long time. And if Steve respects him, well, then is that going to sabotage the new head of baseball, knowing that he's got a baseball guy that's kind of hovering there that's got the ear of the owner? It doesn't sound like a really great deal. And I if I was a Theo Epstein, Peter, I don't know if I'd want the job knowing Sandy's going to be hanging around like that.
Well, first let's look at Beane. Beane and Sandy are very close. So I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Okay.
And Theo, if he came over here, would get so much money and have so much power, there's no way that Sandy could usurp that power. And I it could also be all the years that the Wilpons owned the team, for the last 10 years or so, you know, Steve Cohen was a minority owner. So they became friends. He and Alderson became friends.
All right.
So he's keeping him around. Okay. Also, Alderson's 73. He's not going to stay here for the next 20 years.
No, but I just think that it's a chance to kind of move on. As you said, there's more than enough reason to let him go. And if you're going to bring in somebody that's going to run the baseball, why have another baseball guy just hovering around? Even if you're Billy Beane, Michael, who you respect and you work with at Oakland, you want to feel like you're the guy.
That guy's going to get so much money, so much more money than Sandy. The person that comes in, if it's a big-name person, Sandy will not be able to sway him. I mean, and they'll negotiate the power into their contract.
Well, we'll see. Because, again, it's not about money. Like when I use the analogy about Isaiah didn't even work for the Knicks at that time, but he was still somebody that Jim Dolan respected, and he listened to him.
Right, so then you're proving your own point. Even if Sandy doesn't work for him, he could still sell Steve. I don't think you should bring back Baez. You know, that's not a good
idea.
Yeah,
that is true, but it's a heck of a lot easier for it to happen if he's on the payroll and he's in the building.
Right.
You would think it's an attractive job because there's going to be money to spend, but at the same time, you want to know that you're in complete control of the situation, and there's a lot of work to be done here. Because the one positive about this team collapsing and not making it is that it'll allow them to make the necessary changes. And there's a lot of them. What do you do with Baez? What do you do with Conforto? How are you going to handle this rotation moving forward?
Syndergaard. What do you do with Stroman?
You know, Syndergaard right now was pitching a batting practice. And ironically enough, DeGrom was like playing shortstop. But DeGrom, you know, could be an injury away. Syndergaard is somebody you've got to deal with financially. Stroman is somebody you got to deal with financially. Blowing it up, you guys, you talked me out of that because there are still a lot of good things here. You're not getting rid of Pete Alonso. I don't know if Dom Smith is going anywhere.
He might.
But you might have to think about doing that. He's had a miserable year. And what is McNeil? Was he a flash in the pan or did he just have a bad year? I mean, he was a hit machine, and now this year it seemed like they've learned to throw high fastballs at him, and he's a shell of himself.
Well,
so,
you know what they've done,
what
too? They've turned him into a pull hitter. He's used the whole field. Now everything he's trying to jerk out to right field.
Well, it's not working.
No, it's not.
So there's a and I didn't like what happened today either with them basically almost removing themselves from what happened with Lindor. On Sunday.
Yeah, we should bring that up. Andy Martino of SNY reported exclusively that high-ranking Met people, not Cohen and not Alderson, reached out to the Yankees and kind of apologized for what Lindor said. They said, we have no problem with what was happening, and you know, we apologize. We're not going to report anything. We know that nothing happened. Lindor, I'm paraphrasing, overreacted. And, you know, we don't want to make a big – we just want it to drop and die. So, I mean, in a way, that's kind of throwing your 10-year, $341 million guy under the table.
Now, listen, I didn't like his antics either. That's not my way, and maybe that's not the team's way. I'd like to know who's speaking, because if it's not Cohen and not Sandy, who is it? But it's certainly somebody that's no fan of Lindor. You didn't have his back. He's going to be here for the next decade. You didn't have his back. And why am I treating the Yankees like a deity? All right? They didn't do anything illegal, but, you know, you could still have your players back. You could still be unhappy with it. What do you care what the Yankees think?
Yeah,
really, honestly,
odd.
What do you care what the Yankees think? You're not playing them again. So the fact that you even reacted, did you feel like they had to give an olive branch to the Yankees? They had to talk to who cares what you think? Lindor wasn't happy about it. It's over. You move on.
I'm
Yankees
sure Met
aren't
fans
some
don't
kind
like
of
this.
God, I got to apologize too.
Yeah, why are you apologizing to the Yankees? And you know, talk about like, you know, pointing the finger. You know, Stanton essentially said to Lindor, if you have a problem with Wandy, go. I mean, they threw Wandy under the bus. It was Wandy whistling. But we weren't giving any signs, but, well, you know, Wandy might be here another 4 years. He doesn't have a 10-year, $341 million contract. This is the face of your franchise. And some executive in the Mets is apologizing to the Yankees about Francisco Lindor's actions?
No, I would have a – because I don't know who it is. But if I'm Steve Cohen, I'm telling this executive to shut up. We're going to have the back of our player, right or wrong. Even if you don't, and I'm sure Steve Cohen was no fan of what Lindor did, but he did it. He's our guy. He's going to be our guy for the next 10 years. You're going to go apologize to the Yankees for what? Believe me, Lindor was not the only one that was unhappy with what the Yankees did. And just because what the Yankees did was not illegal doesn't mean it's wrong for the Mets to feel upset about it. Now, maybe you didn't like the way that Lindor reacted, but you got to have the guys back. He's your player. And who cares if the Yankees are hot about it or in a bad way about it? What do you care? You don't have
and
to
also
apologize
reaching
to
out
them.
To
They're
them
not
to
your
say
boss.
You, yeah, to say you're sorry to the again. Why? I mean, you don't play the Yankees. You're not in a division. Why would you even try to patch it up? Well, what is this ooey gooey kumbaya stuff?
That's the thing I took from it is like, well, what do I got to go straighten things out with the Yankees for? One of our players were upset with something that they did. More than one player was. But, oh, what? So we can't have the Yankees be mad at us? What do you care? Who cares if anybody's mad at you?
That story hit a little different. Really did.
Yeah, you know, and it was ironic because I'm watching the 30 for 30 last night, and, you know, the Mets got into a bunch of brawls in 86. I think it was like 4 bench-clearing brawls in that season, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And Bobby Ojeda said, you know, we didn't ask questions. We just went out and supported our teammate. Like, Bill Robinson got into a fight with a Pirate. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And they were all on the bench looking at each other like, what's that about? Well, they didn't ask questions. You know, they just ran out and supported their guy. Right or wrong? I mean, it happens in hockey all the time, right, Peter? It's like, well, yeah, he was wrong to hit the guy, but he's wearing my uniform. I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to support him. He's my guy. Now, if Lindor was a free agent at the end of the year, I'd say, Michael, it doesn't look like this guy's coming back. But you've had him for 10 more years. How does Lindor feel right now?
And also, I will tell you why. If Andy Martino's reporting it, I'm believing it. He's really good at what he does. And then when it comes to the Mets, he has really deeply embedded sources. So if he's writing it, he's not making it up.
I hear Andy Martino pops up on an episode or two of Rich Please.
Really?
That's true. Now, Don, episode 2 of the Mets 30 for 30 ends in July 86, I'm told. And episode 3 is the rest of the regular season, August, September, and the playoffs. Okay. And then 4 is the World Series and aftermath.
Okay.
Where can I watch the first two if I didn't tape them yesterday?
Oh, sure. You can watch that on the ESPN app.
Okay.
ESPN Plus.
That's it.
That's the only place.
Well, because I made the mistake, like I said, I didn't realize they were airing back-to-back. So yesterday when I went to the DVR, even though Michael suggested I go to a higher-up and have it sent to me, I was like, let me just DVR. And I DVR just the one. And I'm like, oh, my God, I don't have the second one. And I went on demand, at least for DirecTV, wasn't there. And then the next time it was airing was like Sunday. I'm like, no, I got the other two coming tonight. I don't want to miss out. So I couldn't find it. It wasn't anywhere. Like Hulu, all that had 30 for 30s, but not the most updated one. But it's on ESPN Plus. So I found it on ESPN Plus, and that's how I watched it. So that you should honestly, you're a baseball guy. So it is really, really good.
I love baseball. Let's take a look at this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. We go back to 1987, Don and Peter. Al Leiter makes his major league debut against the Brewers at Yankee Stadium when Milwaukee was in the American League. He allows just one run on 4 hits over 6 innings and strikes out 8. Mike Felder was his first victim in the first inning. I believe he struck out the first 6 guys. Yankees score Al 3 runs in the bottom of the 4th and get him his first win in a 4-3 victory.
87.
Michael,
yeah.
Before we go to break, I'm going to ask something super important.
Can I just close out the...
Yeah, let him do his work.
That's this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years. Now, Peter Watt.
You're familiar with the company Louis Vuitton.
Yeah.
Now, are you aware that something they do is like boxes, trunks, things like that?
Yes, I do.
How much? How much would you guess the cards box, meaning it holds 2 packs of playing cards? I would like you both to guess how much the box, the Louis Vuitton playing cards box.
$5,000.
So you're talking about something, because I have a box for like 2 playing cards from playing poker. So you're
probably
talking about something that's probably about half the size of a shoebox?
That's right, Don. And you open it up and it's got a clasp.
Right.
And it's, you know, like there's like, you know, red carpeting inside it.
Yeah, that's exactly. I have that.
Okay.
It's not Louis Vuitton.
Well, I would say $350.
I say $5,000.
$3,650.
You know what? If you got that kind of money, man.
See, but those are the people that are buying it. I don't understand why people get upset at that. Anybody that can afford that, they don't even blink at $3,500.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Even if you have, you know, blank you money, like whatever, it doesn't matter. You're lighting cigars with 20s.
Right.
But I would think that you would appreciate the value of something, right? So
no.
Why in God's name would my playing cards that are like that I can get at a 5 and 10 for 99 cents have to be housed in something that expensive?
Because they're showing their friends how wealthy they are.
But the thing is, here's the one part I'll agree with on Don. All of the stuff is ridiculous. But like... A Louis Vuitton, you could get a Louis Vuitton briefcase or something for like $7,000 to $10,000. Now, that's ridiculous, right, Dom? But there's a use to that, right? A real practical use.
Right, because you're probably, if you're that rich, you probably have documents that are very expensive that have to be kept. You know, if you've got luggage, you're probably carrying suits that are worth thousands of dollars.
You're going to business meetings with the briefcase. But the cards case is such, I don't know if there's someone... I wonder what level rich you have to get to where they say, sir, the cards holder is $3,600. How rich you have to be to go, oh.
Well, I make out with money. I love it so much.
That's pretty rich.
That's another name for the show.
that's pretty rich?
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's take a brief time out and just consider my brilliance. 1-800-919-3776. We'll give you information on how to win jet tickets in just a moment. I'm sure you want to know that. That's all coming up as we take your phone calls. We still haven't talked about the Yankee victory yesterday. 5 home runs. And the big game tomorrow. Big game. Blue Jays lead the Rays 4-1. Top of the 5th inning in Toronto. Robbie Ray is on the mound. Bo Bichette has driven in all 4 runs for the Blue Jays. All 4 runs. How about that? Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right, 48 years ago today, the number one song on the Billboard Top 100 was Delta Dawn from Helen Reddy. Great song.
Not familiar.
Delta Dawn, what's that flower you have on? Could it be a faded rose from days gone by? And did I hear you say
something
today?
Take me to that mansion in the sky.
A mansion in the sky is the key, yeah.
Maybe I know.
You know it.
That was a follow-up to I Am Woman.
Andrew, you think you know the song?
The song Michael was just singing?
Yeah.
Not familiar, no.
Stuffed Louis Vuitton teddy bear, $2.1 million. Anthony Perry Jr. just sent us.
Is it stuffed with thousands?
No, just cotton.
Oh, boy. That seems high.
You set two of those bears up and they play cards over the little box.
What did you think the other day of Frank Ocean bringing the mini alien to the Met Gala?
I think the whole thing is wackadoodle. I really do. How do people like look at themselves in the mirror and go, yeah, it's the person I want to be?
I interviewed Lil Nas X today.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him about the gala. He switched outfits like 3 times. He was like, you know, one of the real talks of the whole thing. He said that up until becoming famous through music, he never did anything weird, cared about fashion in the least bit at all. It's only become a thing since he's been famous.
Well, Don used to think when he was younger, he would go to the Met Gala just to see like Lenny Dykstra and Mookie Wilson. He thought they would be there.
Who did?
Oh, well, you know what? Michael's he's telling a funny, but there is something that happened when I was younger that is exceptionally similar to that.
Go ahead.
I love football so much. That this is when I was really young. Well, football, Sunday, right? And sometimes we wouldn't have a 4 o'clock game, depending on what was going on.
Sure.
So CBS would say, you know, coming up, the Skins game, the golf. So I thought that had something to do with the Washington Redskins.
Oh, wow.
And that I wanted to watch it.
You got excited.
because right. I thought it was about football, and then I saw it was about golf and was disgusted.
You just thought, maybe that's why you hate it so much to this day.
Maybe that's it.
Wow. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Because this is a little disturbing.
Oh, come on. Peter, I'm a kid.
You didn't know about time changes, and
that's
you
right.
thought the Skins game was about the Washington football team.
What the heck's a Skins game in golf? Do you even know?
Yeah, I know.
You're a 60-year-old man.
I know what it is.
Go ahead.
It's like match golf. They play against each other. They pick up certain holes. But I know it's golf. I'll tell you that. I didn't think it was about the Redskins.
I was hoping.
How old were you?
Maybe 7?
Nah, it's too old to be that dumb.
So, Peter, not a little anxious kid who loved football. No. I was dumb.
Just dumb.
Let's go to Peter in Bay Ridge. Peter.
Hi, guys. Usually listen on the radio, but today I have you on. Yes. I wanted to know if you could find out or have you heard anything about Carlos Slim helping A-Rod buy the Mets. I've seen pictures of them together. They're friends.
You think Steve Cohen's going to sell the Mets?
No. I'm saying, why didn't A-Rod get the help from Carlos Slim? Because he could blow out Goldman Sachs and Steve Cohen combined. I like Steve Cohen, but I'm just curious if you ever heard anything. His name never came up for A-Rod helping him out.
But why are you bringing the name up now? Is there a connection now?
Only with the fact that it was a mystery of how come it never came up. I can't understand why.
Why Carlos Slim? Why didn't he hook up with Jeff Bezos? I mean, it doesn't make sense what you're asking. Also, A-Rod and J-Lo, they had enough money. They had the same amount of money offered to Steve Cohen. And they could have upped their offer, but it seemed like they wanted to have Steve Cohen as the owner. They weren't short on money.
And who is the guy he's talking about? Slim?
Carlos Slim. He's a multi-billionaire from Mexico who actually owns most of the New York Times.
Did he want to buy the Mets?
I have no idea what the guy's talking about.
Kind of have to want to buy it. You're not going to do that just to make do a favor for Alex.
Right. Let's go to TJ in beautiful Larchmont. TJ.
Thank you. It actually is a frequent listener. It was sort of a combination point, and the bigger point is there's no better Yankee game to watch than when the Yes team is doing the game. And I know everybody's got their favorites. My girlfriend and I was living Paul O'Neill and Coney were doing the game, but you can't beat Ken Singleton. And I even called in once to give props to Rocco because he just had me captivated when he was filling in for Michael that time, telling the Dusty Baker story, how he got his nickname. And it was just great. So I guess the bigger point is I just can't stand watching when other networks are doing it. I won't name names. But take this guy Joe Buck, and he's supposed to be like a legend. And he is. I give him that. But when I was watching the game the other night, I'm surprised Peter didn't call him out on this. I guess they were trying to sound hip and cool, but I'm Long Beach High School class of 81. So they tried to make a Fast Times at Ridgemont High reference when Hand was on the mound.
Yeah, Mr.
Brad Hand.
Yeah, Mr. Hand.
Well, yeah, but it was Brad Hamilton, played by Judge Reinhold, who was the loser who worked at all dead-end jobs like All-American Burger. And Mr. Hand never had a first name. He was the social studies teacher like I used to be.
So, I know, but Joe called him Mr. Hand. He didn't say Mr. Brad Hand. He said Mr. Hand. Listen.
Oh my God.
I'm flattered that you like the Yes broadcast, okay?
Flattered. I wouldn't be.
But here's the deal.
What happened there?
Met fans like the SNY broadcast. Yankee fans like the Yes broadcast. So when the national guys come in, it's not your familiar people that you spend 150 games with. So it's different. But people knock Joe Buck. I mean, Buck is great.
But it's Mr. Hand.
Right.
His last name was Hand. That's the connection
that's
to Fast Times.
That's it. That's all
he wasn't trying to make any other connection describing the characters. Anytime anybody's name is Hand, you think of Mr. Hand from Fast Times because it's an iconic movie.
Right.
What's the matter with you?
And that's all Joe was doing. He called them, here's Mr. Hand.
Be honest with me, Don. How good is Fast Times?
Oh, it's the high school movie.
So now, you think it's outstanding?
For me, now I don't know how somebody of this generation would look at it because maybe it would be over their head or maybe they wouldn't. I don't know if somebody going to high school in 2022, say, will relate to going to high school in 82. But it was relatable to me, and I love it. It's iconic to me.
Michael, fan?
Yes, good.
God. It's like I could ask Bear.
Well, because Michael watches a movie, and it's out.
That's right. And I etch a sketch it out of my brain.
Right.
I don't commit it to memory like people.
It's like bad Mexican food. It's in, and then it's out.
Have you really seen it, Michael?
You don't have to quiz me, okay?
Hey,
listen I'm asking because I haven't seen it.
I know Spicoli.
There you go.
How have you not seen it, Peter? What's the matter with you?
It's one of those, the early 80s movies, Animal House, Breakfast Club, Fast Times.
Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink I know better, and 16 Candles I know better.
Pickup Artist.
But for some reason, I just... The early 80s ones I never had a close connection with. I don't know why.
Listen,
but
we
I'd like to
sit
watch.
Here and rip you for that. We had a guy who worked on the show who never saw Rocky and lied about it.
Who are you talking about?
Ryan Rucco. He lied about it. I said, you've never seen Rocky? He said, oh, yeah, I did. I said, who won? And he goes, Rocky won. Oh, you didn't see it, did you? You didn't see it. And then now, Don made him sit down and watch it with him, and he cried like a baby.
Because you can't do a sports show and not have seen Rocky.
Yeah, the metaphor is pretty important. Like, understanding what the outcome is there and how you would compare that in every other sports situation is pretty essential viewing.
There's a picture right now that they're showing. Rucco watching Rocky, and Rucco has hair there, and he's wearing a Jordan jersey.
Now he's
Don has a bag of Doritos. Look at that.
Wow, so
that was back in the Dorito days.
That's it, way back in the Dorito days.
There's nothing better than watching a movie with a bag of Doritos. Am I right,
I haven't
Donnie?
Had a Dorito since 2015.
Oh, so sad. Hey, Jets football is back. Be at MetLife Stadium for the 2021 home opener when the New York Jets host their division rival New England Patriots on Sunday, September 19th. That's at 1 p.m. The game will celebrate the return of fans, and all attendees receive a free Bud Light Welcome Back Rally Towel. Lock in your seats today at myjets.com/tickets. Get ready to bring back the noise and be listening today, next hour, 5 p.m. hour, when we give you the chance to win a pair of tickets to the home opener. All brought to you by the New York Jets and your home for Jets football, 98.7 ESPN. I just want to tell you, Peter, not that I want to stir anything up, but DiPietro and Rothenberg making fun of the fact that Bear interrupted Dan Orlovsky yesterday.
Is there audio?
I don't know if there's audio, but I do know that they're mocking you and everything you stand for.
They thought it was Orlovsky's dog at first. Well, now I'm even more offended.
First they did, yeah. Well, you know, Bear was a little annoying yesterday.
I'll be honest, Rick listens to the show. He should know.
Listen, I'll be honest. Bear was annoying yesterday, but today he's been with me the entire time. You haven't heard a peep.
Well, because your brother obviously has a huge estate, and he's in another part of the estate. You
that
do
is correct.
The show from a studio apartment, so.
Not a studio apartment. Again, it's a beautiful two-bedroom home. But it is, he hears the neighbors, and he is annoying.
Really believe that you can call an apartment that's like 700 square feet a home?
Well,
that's
listen,
where
I'm
you
not
live.
Gonna,
wait a minute.
Listen.
Home is where you hang your hat.
Oh, thank stop it.
Oh, first okay. All, sorry, Mr. Mansion.
You know what? I don't have a mansion. I never lived in a home until I moved into now. I always lived in an apartment. I never said, this is my home. I said, this is my apartment.
My God.
Michael.
Semantics have never been more offensive.
This is a stupid take by you.
No,
you
got to
get off this.
You don't think you can say, this is my home, unless it's an actual standing, freestanding house?
Yeah, I think you need, or it could be a connected house. It could be a townhouse.
This is an example because you use your words as tools, as weapons.
Right.
You don't understand what home means then.
I know what a home means. But when I lived in apartments, which was most of my life, I never said, please come into my home. I'd say, please come to my apartment.
Well, okay. At the end of the night, you didn't say, I'm going home. You said, I'm going to my apartment.
Yeah.
I'm tired.
Oh, no,
I'm going to go back to my apartment.
I'm going to my bed. I said, I'm going to my bed. I'm not taking an E.
No, he just ended.
Take
it.
It
was like a Tyson roundhouse. Done.
No,
you're
wrong.
No,
just
I'm
take
going.
The L.
Oh, I'm really tired.
Like if
I'm
I met
go
a
back
young lady
apartment.
When I was back in single, right? I wouldn't say, please come back to my home. I'd say, come back to my place. Come back to my apartment.
You wouldn't say, hey, you want to go home with
home.
Me? You would never say you want to go home with me.
No, it would be much more graphic.
Just take the L, man. You're Michael Spinks right now.
The
worse,
nudes
you're
Marcus
Frazier. You're falling to your knees. You're still, yeah, back it up.
I've got a Yankee lineup, which we'll give you in just a moment. But first, we're going to check in with Peter's home. Can I give the street, Peter?
What, where I live in New York?
Yeah.
No, I'm not there.
But still, that's a perfect time to get robbed.
So why would I want you to give up my address?
Okay, good. Kay LeGreco, Rosenberg and you, right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
I love how people, like, you know, they want to take it to the next step, all right? So Dave_Jets on Twitter goes, way to make people who can only afford an apartment seem like they don't have a home. Great job. Really, Dave, first of all, your picture is you're clearly in a house. You're not even in a home. So, you know, pipe down a little bit. You're not speaking from experience. Second of all, I even said when I lived in an apartment, I never looked at it as a home. I look at the word home connects to me house. Hey, I could be wrong. I'm wrong about a lot of things. That's just how I felt. I grew up in the South Bronx in an apartment building. I never looked at it as, oh, this is my home. This is my apartment. It's just semantics. So calm down, Dave. I'm not insulting anybody that can't afford a house, because I could afford a house, and I lived in an apartment, and I looked at it as an apartment. I didn't give the nomenclature of home.
Yeah, it's not a matter of Michael looking down his nose. It's a matter of him being a weirdo. Yeah.
Right. I'm a weirdo.
He is a weirdo.
That's now, all it is. I don't down my nose at anybody.
You know, we haven't talked about very much, guys. I know we said that there were some pass pro problems for the Giants on Sunday. But have you guys seen some of the videos that people have put out from the All-22, I guess, of Solder?
No,
bad, right? But they didn't grade out poorly, though.
I know that. And maybe for the most part, he had a clean pocket and it's on Daniel Jones. But from a separate conversation just about Nate Solder, Don, I'm not saying this to be mean. I'm not rooting against the guy. It looks like he forgot how to play.
Well, he didn't play last year.
He didn't play last year.
See, this is
But he was bad the year before that, too.
But you know how I feel about this team, and I'm in panic mode right now. But the one thing I keep telling myself is it's week one. A guy like Solder didn't play last year. Saquon barely played last year. You know, Jones didn't play a lot in the final month of the season because of his injury. They treated the preseason like a throwaway, and none of those guys played until the Patriot game and barely played in that one. And Steve Young said, you know, September is glorified preseason. So I'm hoping that some of those problems – now, everybody went through it, but – there's a lot more continuity on some of these teams that excelled than what the Giants were going through. So I hope Solder's problems were because he didn't play last year and barely played in the preseason.
Don, here's the problem. Okay.
He didn't play that well when he played 2 years ago.
No, Michael. He was bad. He was the highest at the time, the highest priced tackle in the history of football. Right? He gets here, and listen, we all pull for Nate Solder. We know he's had a tough go of it at home. There's been health issues. It's been really hard. And we all send love to Nate Solder. But when you really think about it, Don, from what they paid for him, and since they've got – it's one of the all-time worst acquisitions in the franchise.
It's another one of those, we've got to win one more for Eli. Let's get him some protection and throw a ton of money at Solder. Now,
but
Solder's
they had no
not
idea
starting
he would
left
fall
tackle
off
anymore. Thomas is. So, really, that's what matters to me the most. But he's on the team, and he's going to be asked to do some stuff.
But here's the thing. If they had thrown money at Nate Solder because they were trying to have one last kick at the can, okay, 7 years, I think he played six or seven in New England?
Right.
That's a totally fine time to sign a top-tier tackle to a long-term deal. You can go get them for another 7 years. A great tackle plays 13, 14 seasons. It happens. But Mike Donnie fell off a cliff.
We'll get into the game that will be tomorrow, New York against Washington. Very quickly before we break, I want to give you tonight's Yankee starting lineup brought to you by Bigelow Tea. And Yankee fans will get upset with this because the Yankees have a clunky roster where you're going to upset somebody all the time because somebody's not going to play. And today that somebody is Joey Gallo, who hit a home run yesterday. And actually he has had, I guess, 4 home runs in 8 games, something like that. DJ LeMay, who leads off, plays third. Aaron Judge in right bat second, hitting third. First baseman Anthony Rizzo. Stanton's in left field batting cleanup. The DH is Luke Voit batting fifth, batting sixth, playing second base Gleyber Torres. Gary Sanchez behind the plate will bat seventh, batting eighth, and playing center field Brett Gardner. And then Gio Urshela is at shortstop batting ninth. So you're not playing Gallo against the lefty Means, but you're going to play Gardner the lefty against Means. So finally, Gallo's starting to hit the ball, and you decide this is the time to rest him. Now, I don't know if this is rest or something's up. We'll see when Aaron Boone speaks, but I never understand when a guy's starting to heat up. He hit a home run yesterday. Why wouldn't you ride it? I don't know. But again, they have a clunky roster, and if you want to get Voit in, then somebody's going to sit that should be playing. And Gardner's been hot, and if so, if you play the full-size backfield in the outfield, Gardner sits on the bench. That's tonight's Yankee starting lineup against the O's, brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Bigelow Tea is a proud supporter of the Michael Kay Show and the official hot tea of Joe Torre and the New York Yankees. All right, we'll break it down for the people when we get back. Also, Luis Rojas, the Met manager, doubles down on resting people with just 16 games to play as he speaks before tonight's Mets and Cardinals game. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Hope you're having a wonderful day. We're trying. A lot of stuff covered today.
Oh, big time.
A lot of stuff. I want to remind everybody the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN brought to you by Geico. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing Geico's been perfecting both for over 75 years. We talked about this at the start. Yesterday, Luis Rojas, after the game, said, I'm not going to push these guys. It's not fair to them. I don't want to risk their health. Well, you're in the middle of a must-win game, and if that's when you're going to push your guys and all the resting that you did in April, May, and June, that's when you do it. Well, Luis doubled down on that again today. He spoke to the media pregame before the Mets and the Cardinals tonight at 7. And he talked about pushing guys to their limits.
That happens organically in a clubhouse around this time, and it doesn't start in September. It starts in August, I think, where the so-called dog days. Okay, so who's going to go ahead and be willing to pitch three in a row or even four in a row? Or catchers like McCann did cut six straight. And there's guys that are going to show up and do things like that. But realistically, like I said last night, it's just guys that can't do it. And from our end, to push and to ask them to do it when they can't, is just, we're compromising a lot of things, right? Performance and health, I think, from a player that is just not feeling good to do it. So that's when the balance comes. But I think that organically those conversations happen, and that mindset also sets up in August with the guys where they say, okay, we're in August and now we're going to be ready. Like Edwin Diaz, we had a doubleheader and he was ready to throw in both games. You know, that didn't happen in June when we had a bunch of doubleheaders, you know, but that's happening in August. Guys are willing to go out there and pitch anytime they can. So not everyone's going to probably do it, but yeah, the guys have that sense of just being available.
Now, see if you interpret this the same way I do. Some of his guys don't want to play.
Yeah.
He can't force them to play because he's saying, if they say they're available, I'll use them. I'm sure Seth Lugo told him, I'm down today. That's why I didn't use him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all there is to it. You can't force a guy to play. And I just think there's a different breed of guy now that plays professional sports because of all the sports science, and they have it drilled into the head. You can't push yourselves. You'll get injured more. And all I see is injured players. All I see is full ILs. That's all I ever see. So all this resting doesn't do anything because everybody gets hurt anyway. So you've created a generation of players that actually think it's their right in a pennant race to say, you know what, I'm going to need a day. And so you could blame Rojas all you want, but I think it's a product of the times rather than Luis Rojas making a mistake and protecting his guys.
Nobody is asking you to throw out your arm and sacrifice your career, but you are a ball player, and you should live for these moments in September to help your team win. Now, again, I don't know if Seth Lugo asked out or not, but he was unavailable in a very, very important game where the Mets are pitching a rookie instead of him. They don't like throwing pitchers 3 days in four nights, as you mentioned. He did not pitch on Monday. Now, he did pitch on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, he threw seven pitches. He did throw 19 on Saturday. That's a lot for Lugo. But it's 26 pitches that he threw in a two-day span and had off on Monday. All right, so you go into the game planning not to use him. But when you get to a situation like you did last night where the game is now winnable, and now you're going to a rookie instead of him, I'm sorry, that's not the time. Best intention could be not to use him, but at that particular point. Now,
what if he says he doesn't want to pitch? He can't go. He can't force him to go.
Well, then you know what, Michael? I don't know what Lugo's contract is. Then I get the word out he didn't want to go. I'm not going to sit there and I'm the one that gets destroyed. I'm the one that gets fired for not using him. You only defend the players so far when your job is on the line. He's going to lose his job, Michael. He's going to be out. And I know you want to be able to protect your players, but I'm the one that's going to end up losing my job because I ended up having to go deep into my bullpen and use a rookie in a game we absolutely had to have, answer questions why I didn't use Seth Lugo, and then I've got to protect Lugo because he doesn't want to pitch? Does that sound fair? I know you're supposed to have your players' backs, Michael, but you know the players are supposed to have your back. Players are supposed to have each other's back.
Well, Lugo does have that elbow problem, right?
Well, that kept him out for a long time.
Yeah.
And I understand. You got to try to. Well, if he's not available, then put him on the IL. Let me call somebody up. Let me do something. Well, I got to be short in arm now. If he's unable to pitch, then don't have him on the roster.
But
that's what I'm saying, Michael. If you're so, this is the semantics of it that drive me crazy. All right, maybe he's got arm problems. Okay, he's coming off an injury. You're right, but you pitched him back to back days. You let him throw 19 pitches on Sunday, and then you give him the off day on Monday, and now he's unavailable on Tuesday?
I just think, again, we're looking at Luis Rojas as the villain here. I think it's just the way players are bred now. That's the way players are raised through the system. They don't even let starting pitchers go more than five innings in the system anymore.
But you even said
it. And then
it
you
yourself.
Complain that pitchers can't give you 8 innings because they haven't been trained to pitch 8 innings.
But you said it yourself, Michael, and I defended the players too. They know they're not expected to go 162. They know that the starting pitchers know they're not going to throw 300 innings. right? Relief pitchers aren't going to make 90-100 appearances. That's not going to happen. Those days are long, long gone. But you said it yourself. The protection that you give these guys are so they're available to you in September.
Right.
That's why you have these guys get off on June and July and August, because you know come September, I'm not going to have the luxury of letting you rest. So the players got to think the same way. Okay, you know, I'm not able to go, but now I need you guys. All these team meetings, what do you think they say in these team meetings, Michael? We need everybody, all hands on deck. This game is important. There's no tomorrow.
But this is this
pitch,
isn't
get, let them know you can't pitch, and we'll put you on the IL. We'll bring somebody else who can.
This isn't exclusive to the Mets. The first game of the Subway Series, the guy who has the most home runs at Citi Field as a visiting player was not playing. No, I'm not going to play Stanton 3 days in a row. I mean, it's unbelievable.
But here's where it's not as relatable. I get that at the beginning of the game, your intention is Lugo's unavailable. We're going to do everything we can not to pitch Lugo because we don't want to pitch him a third day in four nights. But doesn't that change later on in the game? The equal to what you said with Stanton would be, we're giving Stanton the day, and then there's a chance to pinch a hit with him, and you decide not to because we got to give him the day. No, I would think if the Yankees in that first game on Friday desperately needed him and needed a right-handed batter late in the game, needed a home run to win the game, I'm sure he would have been available to them. Because you change the plan. The hope is we're not going to have to use them. But if I'm the Mets and I'm now in the 11th inning of a must-win situation, sorry, Seth, best of intentions are sometimes change. We got to pitch you. I asked it earlier in the show. What if that went 13, 14 innings? Were they going to throw a positional player out there before they brought Lugo in?
It's incumbent upon the player to walk up to the manager and say, I know I have the day off, but I'll go in. If Lugo never did that, then you can't force him to do it.
How many times, especially with Joe Torre, and I know that was another era, where he said somebody was unavailable and at the end of the game had to answer questions on, he still brought him in the game.
Right.
Right? That happened. Bobby Valentine used to do it. A lot of managers do it because, you know what, things change. Best of intentions, right?
But he never said at the beginning of the game, Lugo's unavailable, but he didn't use him. So obviously Lugo could not pitch, didn't want to pitch. Also, he didn't push Stroman passed 89 pitches, and Stroman's been great. Six innings of great baseball. 89, you think you get one more inning out of him. He didn't push him. And even Stroman said, hey, I didn't pitch any innings last year, so maybe they're trying to protect me. So it's something that's all about the 21st century baseball. It's different than the old days.
But how do you do that and then say that winning is the most important thing? Then it's not.
Maybe not to the player it is.
Well, then I got to get new players, Michael.
Well, that's why I said at the beginning of the show, you mark it down in your head, the guys that say, I need a day, and you get rid of them. If you need a day in the middle of a pennant race, then there's not the proper engine there.
Well, or, you know what, forget it.
Wow. Go too soon.
Wow.
Now, Steve says, so they rest players and everyone screams, me included, but Matt Harvey demands the pitch and the Mets get vilified. That's a little bit of a different situation because you have options.
Nobody vilified them to pitch Matt Harvey. After he walked the first batter, you take him out.
Right, but I think we vilified the Mets more so than Harvey. Nobody killed Harvey for wanting to come back into the game. We applaud that. But sometimes you got to have somebody to say, no, sorry, we're taking the ball from you. I'll never complain about a guy that wants to stay in a game. But that's where a manager's got to step in and say, no, I think it's better if you come out of the game. But for a pitcher to make himself unavailable when he's not hurt in a game the Mets absolutely have to have, that's not somebody I want on my team. Now, we don't know that's the case, but boy, it really sounded like – like from Rojas,
of course it did.
That he was working with the deck was stacked against him. He was not. He was working short.
Or you have guys. What I was going to say was before Bear interrupted me was you have guys who are now because of the feel of this team deciding whether it's worthwhile or not. Where maybe yes they believe the attitude is you play when you're supposed to play you play. But right now, it's almost like they're infected with a lack of belief in this team.
And you know what, Peter?
That's incredibly problematic.
That's a good point, because the fans can give up. I can sit here and tell you they're not good enough. But as a player, you fight till your last breath.
If you're mathematically alive.
I don't care if you're 15 out with 16 to play. you're mathematically alive. You play it out. You owe it to the fans. You owe it to yourself. Because I know you get paid, and I know you got in this business to get the contract and all that. But ultimately, you're an athlete and a competitor. And a competitor wants to compete in the biggest moments. And that last night was the Mets Game 7.
It's time now for the Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. So we gave you the lineup, and Joey Gallo's not in it. And Aaron Boone said that Joey Gallo is just being held out of tonight's lineup. It's just a day of rest, as well as trying to balance keeping Luke Voit and Brett Gardner in the lineup. I told you, clunky roster construction, because Luke Voit's an everyday player. Brett Gardner is essentially an everyday player. Sometimes an everyday player is going to have to sit. But you have so much invested in Gallo, where he has been terrible for a month, and now he's starting to hit the ball out. And I know that he did not have a good game a week and a half ago against Means. I think he struck out 3 times. He strikes out all the time. That's part of the package with him. But now that he's hitting the ball out, this is the day you rest him because you have to get another lefty, Brett Gardner, in the lineup? I don't know, man. I don't know if I agree with it. I just don't. It's tough. That's tough.
And you know what, Michael? It goes for the Yankees too, right? We talk about why these guys rest, and we always blame it on the manager. We blame it on the organization. Everybody's asking me and you on Twitter, why is Brett Gardner, why is he always playing? Why is he always there? If it's more on the player than the manager, doesn't it make sense that Brett Gardner always wants to play? Doesn't he look like the guy that you can't take out of the lineup? The guy that you're going to have to rip the jersey off of him? So maybe that's why Brett Gardner's always in the lineup, because he's the one guy that always wants to play. Maybe it's not on the ownership and the general manager and the organization and the manager himself. Maybe these players don't want to play. And the reason Brett always plays is because he's the one guy that doesn't want to get out of lineup. Is that possible?
It could be. I mean, he would come in and scream and flip over a table if he was, quote-unquote, the everyday center fielder and he wasn't allowed to play. He wants to play till the last breath. I just don't think there's a lot of guys like that. I'm sure Gallo wants to play. But again, Boone has to make tough decisions. And I've said this before, and it's like a broken record. They're not that much into hot. So they're going to play who they want to play. And because of clunky roster construction, where there really is not a spot for Luke Voit, and you're putting Stanton in the outfield where he's probably it's not optimum with his legs. And yesterday he turned a pop fly into a hit, which ended up being the only run scored against Gerrit Cole. But he's in the outfield again because Luke Voit has to play. As long as Rizzo plays at first base, Luke Voit either sits on the bench or is a DH. So I'm not blaming Boone, because here's the thing I'll tell you. Any decision he makes is going to be arguable. So if he didn't start Voit today, right, and DH Stanton, and had Gallo in the outfield with Judge and Gardner, people be screaming, why'd you sit Voit? He hit a home run yesterday. Well, 5 guys hit home runs yesterday. Not the hamburger guys. 5 Yankees hit home runs. And he's sitting one of them. He's sitting one of them. It was either going to be him or it was going to be Voit. And Voit hit a long home run and Gallo hit a home run. So it's Means tonight against Nestor Cortez.
Now, let's face it, you can mess around because, and I know they lost 2 games to them last week. You're not losing to this Oriole team.
Although this is the game that you're going to have the most trouble with, because Means can pitch. Means is their ace. He has a 3.42 ERA, which is pretty good.
And I got it. Really, I guess the only negative last night, Michael, that it took Cole 107 pitches to get through 5?
Yeah, the long layoff, you could see it affected his location. And 29 sure, pitches in the first inning.
And I'm sure, you know, they wanted to keep him in because they were up 5-0, I think, at the time, so they wanted him to get the win. It probably killed them to keep him in as long as they did.
Oh, that was his last batter. If he didn't get DJ Stewart to end the fifth inning, he was going to come out and not get his 15th win.
And he would have went kicking and screaming.
Yeah, I think 109 is enough, especially after
the hamstring
was obviously heavily taped, too. But you know what? They're supposedly not care about wins. That's why the Cy Young 500 wins will never be touched. I don't know if anybody who's starting in baseball right now will ever get to 300 wins. They don't care.
I understand that in the grand scheme of things, but in the moment you're an out away from registering a win, you don't want to get it.
Right. No,
I'm
get
sure
it.
They would. I'm sure Cole would, of all people.
I think they give him a little bit more latitude than anybody else. That's the Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to David in Bear Mountain. David.
Thank you for taking my call, guys. The show is awesome.
Thanks.
I just want to get your gut instincts on this. I don't want to hear about, you know, numbers or this is how it's set up. Wild card, the Yankees are by one. Forget about the numbers. Forget about this, the way it was set up and, you know, the analytics. You know, what would your gut feeling tell you? And I want to get Don and also Peter's take on this for Chapman to close the game.
I'd say he's closing the game unless, you know, in the week before he was absolutely horrid. But I still think he's going to close the game because my question I would ask anybody else is, who are you leaving out, as Don would say, the opposite of that? Who are you putting in? Who's closing? Has Chad Green made you confident? Who's closing? Albert Abreu at that age, you think he's going to close the game?
Well,
Joely Rodriguez?
No.
Wandy Peralta? It's going to be Chapman.
If the wild card game was tonight, it's Chapman.
Right.
If you have Loaisica and Chapman doesn't really gain any confidence over the next month,
right,
then maybe it could be Loaisica. But
yeah,
right
if you
now,
have Loaisica.
Like you said, who is it going to be?
It's got to be him.
Well,
I mean, they like Clay Holmes, but Clay Holmes has never pitched in a big game before he joined the Yankees. He used to pitch for Pittsburgh.
Well, if it's the wild card game, now this is an interesting question. If it's the wild card game and it's 1-0 Yankees against the Red Sox,
mm-hmm.
and Cole's got 115 pitches through eight.
He's coming out for the ninth.
120.
Yeah. No, 100... I don't think they hurt him.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'd be the question is, because if they don't have Loaisica and they don't have an option, how long are you willing to go with the starter? And assuming that it's going to be Cole and assuming that he's going to pitch to the point where the Yankees have a lead, then that's what you have to start asking yourself is, am I going to have Cole maybe go a little longer than I want and have him be the option?
Well,
like he was in Houston.
They needed that was a game I was going to bring up. They desperately needed that game in Houston. They pitched 129 pitches. So I think that would be the limit. Because you got 7 more years of him, and if you win the wild card game, you're going to need him in the postseason, the rest of the postseason. Let's go to Mark in Brookhaven. Mark.
First, every time you guys sing, Civilization loses a second off the doomsday clock.
Knock
it off because life is too good.
That's sad.
Hey,
Mark.
Michael, you had mentioned that you never use the F word in real life because you don't want to have to maybe, you know, worry about mistakenly using it on air. How about keeping your composure during the broadcast? Because you do a great job with that. But then during this show, you can obviously let it fly. How do you let that flip over?
Well, because here's the deal, Mark. It's two completely different jobs. So, I mean, I'm supposed to give my opinion here, and I could get agitated and I could get angry. I'm not really the opinion giver on the show, on the game. Those are the analysts. Occasionally I'll sprinkle in a feeling or so, but completely different job. It's not like I'm being a phony or two different people. I have two different jobs.
But you are a phony about the F word. He should remember that. It's a gimmick for you now. You just like telling people you don't say it.
But you could say it's a gimmick, right? But it's a gimmick that I actually execute. I don't say it.
You live up to it for the gimmick's sake. You're living the gimmick.
I would say it probably turned into a gimmick. But I have not said it, so it's not like it's a lie.
But it's a good thing, Peter, because if he used it as often as we do, then it would be a thing if he started yelling at you or me or a caller that it could slip out. I mean, it is something that we are conscious of, right? Because we have potty mouth, so we've got to be careful. When I'm going into a rant, I got to be careful. But I've done a great job. Umbada, from way back in the day, a drop that was, I think, lost. I think Joey took it. Remember Umbada?
Yep. It's like an NFT that he owns.
There was a drop, Peter, because I don't know if you ever heard the story.
It was remind me. I have heard of it, but I don't remember.
Because
what it was
way back. We were at the other studio as the infancy of the station. I went on a rant, and I almost dropped an F-bomb. I sucked it back into my mouth.
Oh, right.
And it was it was really brilliant because I was talking about like a player that wasn't worth playing, and I almost said the word. And then on the fly, I had to come up with something that rhymed with the word I was about to say, but then made sense in the context of what we were talking about. So I went to mucking stalls.
Yeah.
But in the transition of me sucking it back into my mouth, the word, the sound was umbada. Oh, well, we still have it.
Yeah,
we never hear that anymore.
Well, they don't like it.
It's hard context-wise to just randomly play.
I didn't know how to spell it. I found it eventually. It's O-O-O-M-B-U-H-D-U-H.
See, I never thought it was O. I always thought it was a U.
But Michael doesn't have to worry about that because he never used the word.
Top of the fifth inning in Seattle, Red Sox and the Mariners, 3-3. Top of the fifth inning and bottom of the eighth inning in St. Pete, the Blue Jays 6 and the Rays 3. A great start by Robbie Ray. I'll tell you what, Robbie Ray against Garrett Cole is going to be a great race to see who's going to win the American League wild card. Here's your shot to qualify for the Week 2 Pigskin Payout. It's your chance to play in the 98.7 Sportsbook and win $250 or up to $1,000 for correctly picking the Jets and New England Patriots game. All you have to do, this is it, be the first caller right now at 888-987-ESPN to qualify. We'll be selecting our winner this Friday, so keep it locked in to the Michael Kay Show for your Pigskin Payout.
Blue Jays are back in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that game is in Toronto then.
Yes. Why? Did I... Oh, I said St. Pete. I'm sorry. Yes, it's in Toronto. My bad. They play them again next week, and that will be in St. Pete.
Ah.
So only one more at bat for the Rays. Bo Bichette has had a big game.
He's good.
How do you not say Boba Fett?
Why would I say that?
Because, isn't it right, Peter? Don't you think of Boba Fett every time
Boba Fett
says it?
Michael doesn't even know who Boba Fett is.
I don't know. Who is Boba Fett?
It's a character from the more recent Star Wars.
Never, I've never seen Star Wars, so how would I say that name?
Not even for the kids?
No. Maybe, I mean, I don't think they'd be into it now. They're 8-6.
Yeah, oh, I played Empire Strikes Back a month ago for the kids, and they loved it, and they're 3.
Your kids, Don, we know it. They're going to be literally just you. Hockey, Star Wars, Giants, Mets. We know what's happening.
I don't like Star Wars at all. But I'm not going to deprive my kids of the pleasure.
But you don't like, you showed them Empire Strikes Back?
Well, yeah, because it was something I watched when I was a kid.
Right.
I'm watching it now.
Now, real quick, if the kids say, we want to choose, should we be Mets fans or San Francisco Giants fans, what do you say?
Do what you want. I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to force them.
And would you also say, if you want a life of joy, take the Giants?
If you want to be, if they ask my advice, I will say, you know what? The Giants will give you a lot more pleasure.
I had the long talk with Callie yesterday. I said I don't want to hear you with a potty mouth. I said, because people look down on people that curse all the time, and if you curse, that means you have a limited vocabulary and you can't get out your frustration other than to use a curse word. And she looked at me. She goes, but a lot of my friends do. I said, well, they're lowlifes.
Well, are you like emulating the episode of Ted Lasso?
What do you mean?
Ted Lasso last week was about this exact subject.
No, I've always felt that way. The people that curse are doing it because their vocabulary is limited and they can't really articulate what they feel.
But you curse.
But it was also another example, Michael, of you actually just picking back up from the conversation 5 minutes ago and ignoring what we were actually talking about.
I heard exactly what you were saying.
Are you sure?
Actually, it disinterested me, so I moved on.
Wow.
Let's take a quick timeout. I heard exactly what you were saying.
You
I was locked into everything that you were saying.
No,
you're telling
me
about you're going to tell them to have the Giants or the Mets about a better life. Blah, blah. First of all, you'd have no say in it. Nancy is going to make them Giant fans, period. She's the boss of the house.
No, she. When we went to the game a few years ago, she bought a Giant hat for Jalen, and I had the Met hat for Marco. So
Frauds.
She will not be that way.
A fraudulent family.
Let's take a brief time out. We'll take some phone calls when we get back right here on 98.7 ESPN. And yes.
Mm-da-da. Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.